This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
You know, history has taught us that when terrorists don't pay a price for their terror, when dictators don't pay a price for their aggression, they cause more chaos and death and more destruction.
That was President Joe Biden on the need to not let terrorists go unpunished. Details coming up also. Biden appealed to Israel not to be consumed by rage in its response to the Hamas attack. And we'll be talking with our White House bureau chief about the president's speech on live television. These stories and more on African News Tonight. We start with our top story. President Joe Biden has appealed to the American people to continue funding Ukraine and Israel amid the war efforts. The appeal comes after Biden flew to Tel Aviv on Wednesday, pledging his support for Israel in the wake of the sprawling attack carried out by Hamas militants this month. VOA's Douglas Mpuga listened to the president's speech and has the details.
In an address Thursday, only a second from the Oval Office, President Joe Biden said that supporting Ukraine and Israel is a matter of U.S. national security when the world is at an inflection point.
I know these conflicts can seem far away. It's natural to ask, why does this matter to America? So let me share with you why making sure Israel and Ukraine succeed is vital for America's national security. You know, history has taught us that when terrorists don't pay a price for their terror, when dictators don't pay a price for their aggression, they cause more chaos and death and more destruction. They keep going, and the cost and the threats to America and the world keep rising.
The president said he's requesting $100 billion from Congress to deliver aid and resources to Ukraine and Israel. The U.S., Egypt, and Israel have all signaled readiness for aid to begin moving into Gaza following Biden's high-profile visit.
That's why tomorrow I'm going to send to Congress an urgent budget request to fund America's national security needs, to support our critical partners, including Israel and Ukraine. It's a smart investment that's going to pay dividends for American security for generations, help us keep American troops out of harm's way, help us build a world that is safer, more peaceful, more prosperous for our children and grandchildren.
The Biden administration in August delivered its last supplemental funding request. The proposal requested $24.1 billion to aid Ukraine through the end of the year, but Congress failed to approve it during a process to greenlight short-term federal funding. Now Congress has been paralyzed for over 2 weeks without an elected House Speaker. Douglas Mpuga for VOA News, Washington.
Meanwhile, Israel bombarded Gaza earlier today, hitting areas in the south where Palestinians had been told to seek safety, and it began evacuating an Israeli town in the north near the Lebanese border, the latest sign of a potential ground invasion of Gaza. Also today, dozens of trucks carrying aid into the besieged territory remain stalled in Egypt as road repairs are carried out at the Rafah gate entrance points into Gaza. And in communities around in the Middle East, protests are being held calling for an end to the fighting. Last night, U.S. President Joe Biden again pledged unwavering support for Israel's security while saying the world cannot ignore the humanity of innocent Palestinians in Gaza. Today, the White House said it was asking Congress for $14 billion in aid for Israel. Biden also said he will ask for $100 million in aid for residents of Gaza. White House correspondent Patsy Wida-Kuswara is standing by to brief us on the developments in Washington. Welcome to Africa News Tonight, Patsy.
My pleasure to be with you.
So go ahead, Patsy. Break down some of the major points the president laid out regarding the Israeli-Hamas conflict in his address to the nation.
So last night in his address, what the president tried to do is basically equate Hamas and Putin, saying that even though they represent different threats, they share one thing in common, which is they want to completely annihilate a neighboring democracy. And he also said that history has taught us a lesson that when terrorists don't pay a price for their terror, when dictators don't pay a price for their aggression, they will continue to cause more chaos and more death and destruction. And he also said that American leadership is what holds the world together. However, this argument will be viewed with skepticism, particularly from citizens of the Arab world and also the global south, where you have seen many cases of massive and in some cases violent anti-Israel and anti-U.S. demonstrations, because they see Israel as an occupying force that continues to annex Palestinian territory supported by the U.S., even as the Biden administration denounces Russia's annexation of parts of Ukraine. So this is a moral high ground argument that will be difficult for him, for President Biden, to defend, particularly in the Arab world and the global south.
So what happens now with Biden's request for aid for Israel and Gaza, and especially for Gaza, the deal to get aid into Gaza through Rafah, the territory's only crossing not controlled by Israel, remains very fragile.
Yes, you are correct. So this is one of the things that President Biden was able to secure in his visit to Tel Aviv. On the way back, he called President al-Sisi of Egypt, whom, as you know, controls the Egyptian side of the border of the Rafah crossing. So he has been able to secure between Israel and Egypt the opening of the Rafah crossing for a first convoy of trucks, about 20 trucks. But, you know, there's still a lot of issues to be resolved. For example, the roads need to be paved because they've been bombarded, and then Israel has to be able to check those trucks, make sure that there are no smuggling from Hamas of weapons or anything else. So that's one corridor that President Biden is still trying to continue to push. What he is requesting also from Congress is $14.3 billion for Israel in order to support its war against Hamas, and also about $9.5 billion in humanitarian aid. That is for both Ukraine as well as for the citizens of Gaza and of the West Bank. Now, the White House official who briefed us this morning did not say how much of that $9 billion will go to Ukraine and how much will go to Palestinian citizens. But one thing that is for sure, this huge number of money that President Biden is requesting, it really has to pass the House, and the House must have a speaker to pass legislation. And we know so far no Republican has been able to secure the 217 votes needed to claim the speaker's gavel.
And how has the president's speech been received in the U.S. as well as throughout the free world?
Well, in the U.S., I think you can see from public polls that the majority of Americans, when they are presented with an option of what should the U.S. do in Israel and Hamas conflict, 41% say that the U.S. should support Israel. And, you know, for various reasons, historical, political, there's a really strong affiliation and a strong support for Israel, who is seen as a key ally in the U.S. But President Biden is also seeing some of that support fraying, particularly from his own coalition, progressive wing of the Democrats, who say that we must not overlook the suffering of the Gazan people. We must not support Israel with a blank check. And we must do more to ensure that Israel does not violate the laws of war. So these are all issues that President Biden is fighting, is facing, while at the same time he also must ensure that commitment to support Ukraine in its fight against Russian invasion continues.
And lastly, talk to me about this, the elephant in the room, Lebanon's Hezbollah militant group. It has a massive arsenal of long-range rockets, and it has traded fire with Israel along the border on a nearly daily basis and hinted it might join the war if Israel seeks to annihilate Hamas. What is the U.S.
Absolutely.
Position regarding the Hezbollah and Iran?
Absolutely, this is something that President Biden is very concerned about, right? I mean, this risk of conflict being widened and deepened, and then the U.S. being dragged into a much more, much wider regional war. So President Biden, on the one hand, must show that the U.S. is backing Israel with enough firepower to deter Iran and militant group proxies such as Hezbollah from coming into the conflict. As you mentioned, you know, they have fired rockets. Hezbollah has fired rockets from Lebanon. There's border skirmishes. And not only that, cruise missiles and drones have also been launched by Houthi forces in Yemen, potentially towards targets in Israel. These were intercepted yesterday by the American warship in USS Kearney in the Red Sea. So it's a very volatile situation. President Biden is trying hard to contain it. However, his unwavering support for Israeli actions in Gaza also inflaming anti-American sentiments with populations in the Arab world and creating political instability in the region and political pressure on their government. So it's a very, very difficult situation to navigate.
White House correspondent Patsy Wida-Kasuara, thank you for your input.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Several human rights groups are asking African governments to petition the International Criminal Court to investigate alleged Israeli war crimes in Gaza. The Southern African Litigation Center led the call with a letter to the leaders of the members of the African Union posted on its website. However, there are those who say the call only highlights how divided Africa is on the conflict in the Middle East, with some nations strongly supporting Israel and others backing Palestinians. Darren Taylor reports.
The Southern African Litigation Center is leading calls for an African-driven effort to take Israel to the International Criminal Court. Some legal and political analysts say it won't succeed because African countries don't see the conflict between Israel and Palestinians in the same way. Kenya, for example, with its long history of suffering attacks by terrorists, supports Israel. South Africa compares the Palestinian struggle for self-determination with its battle against apartheid and condemns Israel for bombarding Gaza.
You see the world getting more and more divided, particularly on this latest round of the conflict. There is no unity in terms of the Africans' position because Africa is so polarized. So it's a very
Tembisa Fakude is senior researcher at the Africa-Asia Dialogues in Johannesburg. He told VOA that Africa's 54 nations can't be expected to speak in one voice on Israeli-Palestinian affairs, as each has a distinct foreign policy to represent national interests. However, he says the attempt by African human rights groups to mobilize support for a war crimes case against Israel is fair, given its actions in the Palestinian territories, Gaza and the West Bank.
Israel has said that it's fighting Hamas, and it has continued to say so. But if you look at what's happening in the West Bank, Hamas is not in power in the West Bank. Hamas won the election in 2007 in Gaza, and that's why they're in the position they're in at the moment. But the continuation of invasion and continuation of suppression of rights and killing of people shows you that Israel is not really interested only at terminating the dominance of Hamas in Gaza. But, you know, it's just an open, continual collective punishment because of what had happened on the 7th of October, and as a result for them to...
On October 7, Hamas militants entered Israel, killed an estimated 1,400 people and took about 200 hostages. Since then, Israel has blocked food, fuel and medicines from reaching Gaza and has bombed the territory with missiles and airstrikes. The United Nations says the Israeli attacks have killed nearly 4,000 people and ruined large parts of Gaza. On a call with South African reporters Thursday, Israeli Cabinet Minister Amichai Chikli said Hamas should be charged with committing atrocities, not Israel.
There was no atrocity that was made by Israel that justified this attack. And even if there was a context of war, this is a terror crimes, crimes against humanity, against babies, deliberately going to murder babies and parents in their homes. So I don't see any symmetrical between us and between the terrorists.
Fakude says another indication that Africans won't be able to lay charges against Israel at the ICC is that the Jewish state has observer status at the African Union. When announcing Israel's observer status last year, AU Commission Chair Moussa Faki said he could not ignore that 44 member states recognize the state of Israel and have diplomatic ties with Tel Aviv. He added that Israel deserved observer status because a large number of African states had opened their markets and economic space to Israeli enterprises and signed cooperation agreements in diverse fields, including defense, security, and intelligence. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
President Biden has appealed to Israel not to be consumed by rage in its response to the attack by Hamas and cautioned against making the same mistakes the United States made after the 9/11 terrorist attacks. Biden has also warned that reoccupying Gaza would be a mistake. The Israeli government is seeking to inflict as much damage as possible on Hamas and its infrastructure in response to the militant group's October 7th attack that left an estimated 1,400 Israelis dead and 200 held hostages. Israeli forces are expected to soon launch a ground offensive on Gaza. Wolfgang Porstei, former Austrian military attaché, discussed the war scenarios, starting with the possible involvement of Hezbollah in Lebanon, with VOA senior analyst Mohammed El-Shenawi.
The Israeli Air Force uses for the time being only a fraction of its capacity for the war in Gaza. Most of the attacks are conducted by artillery with precision-guided ammunition due to the short range required. In the case of an escalation by Hezbollah, more than enough strike sorties, several hundreds, would be available to bomb Hezbollah and other targets in southern Lebanon. But on the other side, keeping the sheer number of rockets and missiles available to Hezbollah in mind, numbers say more than 120,000, maybe even as much as 180,000, there will be quite some damage in northern Israel, even if Israel's Iron Dome continues to intercept between 90 and 95% of the incoming rockets. So there will be a significant damage to civilian Israeli areas in the northern part of Israel. However, while it is unlikely that Hezbollah would be able to invade Israel on the ground, the Israelis would significantly damage the military capabilities of Hezbollah and most likely also the infrastructure in southern Lebanon. This brings me to the situation in Lebanon. There is a major ongoing economic crisis and a power struggle. They don't have a president since more than a year. They only have an interim government. And all this needs the attention of Hezbollah, and all this needs, in the case the situation escalates, also the military power of Hezbollah. So I'm not sure Hezbollah is ready to lose a significant amount of its military capabilities in a war with Israel, which will be at the very end, at best, a draw, and annoyed by the civilian casualties and by the damage of southern Lebanon, annoy the Lebanese population. However, the pressure from the Arab streets, especially after incidents like the bombing of the hospital in Gaza, might push Hezbollah into a non-rational decision, which means a major attack on Israel. And this will be certainly a bloodbath.
The Israeli government is seeking to inflict as much damage as possible on Hamas and its infrastructure, with Netanyahu having called for mighty vengeance, while this goal is impacted by Israeli hostages in Gaza. Could Israel reoccupy Gaza even when President Biden said it would be a mistake?
Well, from a military point of view, I think they would be able to occupy it. But I don't think such an occupation of Gaza would make sense for Israel, neither from a military point of view, nor from an economic and nor from a political point of view. Sustaining a military occupation among 2 million hostile Palestinians would cost a heavy blood toll over time. They would need to deal with ambushes, bomb explosions, and other incidents every day. And this would certainly kill many Israelis, which is certainly not what Israel wants to see in the near future. This would be also a very expensive adventure. To sustain an occupation army of, let's say, 100,000 is a very expensive entertainment. And keeping in mind that Israel's economy is also suffering heavily from the war, I doubt that the Israelis want to conduct such an occupation in the Gaza Strip. It would be furthermore also a political disaster, also domestically and certainly internationally. As we see, there is some opposition, quite some opposition to the right-wing Israeli government. I doubt that the Israelis, that the vast majority of the Israelis, would be willing to accept such a military adventure in the Gaza Strip again. Let's keep in mind, they have occupied the Gaza Strip until the early 2000s.
But short of occupying Gaza, could Israel just evacuate the northern part of Gaza and transfer it into a safe zone?
Well, I don't think this would make sense from a military point of view, because Hamas or any other Palestinian resistance movement could fire on Israel also from the southern part of the Gaza Strip. This would probably just annoy Egypt, which is an important security partner for Israel, because it would compress 2 million Palestinians into a very, very tight area. And this would certainly also have an impact on the security of Egypt. So I think within a couple of weeks, the Israelis will need to allow the people of Gaza to return also to the northern part of the Gaza Strip.
That was Wolfgang Porstei, former Austrian military attaché, speaking with VOA senior analyst Mohammed El-Shinawi. Two U.S. members of Congress recently joined hundreds of Americans appealing to President Joe Biden to protect Palestinian lives amid expectations of an Israeli ground invasion of the Gaza Strip. Hundreds of protesters showed up at the U.S. Capitol on Wednesday to demand a cessation of hostilities between Hamas and Israel. VOA's Ignatius Anor was there and has this report.
Ceasefire now! At the Washington Peace Rally, U.S. Representative Rashida Tlaib, a Democrat from the Midwestern state of Michigan, denounced what she calls attempts to politicize the deadly conflict.
I want him to know, as a Palestinian American, is also somebody of Muslim faith, I'm not going to forget this. I think the White House and everyone thinks that we're just going to sit back and let this just continue to happen. No! You know what's so hard sometimes is watching those videos and the people telling the kids don't cry and like let them cry and they're shaking and somebody you know this, they keep telling them not to cry in Arabic. They can cry, I can cry, we all can cry. If we're not crying, something is wrong. And so I'm telling you right now, President Biden, not all America's with you on this one. And you need to wake up and understand that.
Tlaib spoke at Wednesday's rally organized by two Jewish organizations, Jewish Voices for Peace and If Not Now. The conflict began on October the 7th when Hamas fighters from Gaza attacked communities in Israel not far from the Gaza border. Hundreds of Israelis were killed and nearly 200 others were kidnapped. The Israeli government responded with a massive bombardment of Gaza, which Hamas governs, and cut off food, fuel, medical supplies, and electricity from the enclave. U.S. Congresswoman Cori Bush, a Democrat from the Midwestern state of Missouri, joined the rally. She says a resolution calling for a ceasefire in the Israeli-Hamas conflict is steadily gaining traction among some U.S. lawmakers.
We demand that the world and our government don't turn a blind eye to the collective punishment against Palestinians that we are witnessing, even as we strongly condemn Hamas for the appalling. And I cannot okay any loss of any life simply because the Lord looked down and saved mine. We introduced a ceasefire resolution that calls on the Biden administration to demand an immediate de-escalation and ceasefire in Israel-occupied Palestine.
U.S. President Joe Biden met with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu during a one-day trip to Israel on Wednesday and pledged U.S. solidarity with the Israeli government. But he also pushed for Israel and Egypt to allow humanitarian aid into the Gaza Strip, but also called for Israel to show restraint in its fight with Hamas and to allow aid into Gaza. Ignatius Anor, VOA News, Washington.
And the Council on American-Islamic Relations, CARE, says the hotel scheduled to host its annual banquet in Arlington, Virginia tomorrow has been canceled after anti-Palestinian and anti-Muslim extremists threatened to plant bombs and kill hotel staff. The United States' largest Muslim civil rights and advocacy organization plans to hold the banquet at an alternate location with heightened security. Law enforcement authorities have been notified of the threats in a statement. CARE National Executive Director Nihad Awad said, "We strongly condemn the extreme and disgusting threats against our organization." He vowed the threats would not stop the organization's work for justice. In his address to the American people last night, U.S. President Joe Biden urged Americans to refrain from hate, saying both anti-Semitism and Islamophobia will not be tolerated. And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbil Yabaro, and our engineer, John Dryden, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.